Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the City in the Park show. Today we have a special show because we're doing an interview, and I have a brother and a sister here who are going to talk about the different groups they sang with. I'm going to play some of their records, which are really good, and we'll find out some of their story. So can you introduce yourselves?
My name is Sharona Brooks.
And I'm Archie Brooks.
Okay, and the two main groups we'll be talking about are Betty Scott and the Del Vets, which was Sharona and her sisters.
Yes.
And the Fugitives, which Archie actually sang lead on. And then
right.
He was in a group called the Master Plan Incorporated.
Right.
So, first of all, are you all originally from Chicago?
No. We are originally from Cleveland, Mississippi.
Okay. Wait, is that near any bigger cities in Mississippi?
Jackson.
Yeah, of course.
A couple hours from Jackson.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was it pretty small?
Yes.
Very small.
And when did you move to Chicago?
In 1963.
Was it just because you were looking for bigger things? Or?
Well, no. My parents were here in Chicago, and one of my older sisters was keeping us.
Okay.
As kids, and she passed away. So when she passed away, my mother and father had to come and get us, and that's why we moved to Chicago.
Oh, okay.
In 63.
I'm sorry to hear about your oldest sister.
Yeah.
So where did you move to Chicago when you went to Chicago?
When we left Cleveland, Mississippi, we moved to the near north side of
1119
Chicago.
1119 North Cleveland.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was that Cabrini Green?
Cabrini Green, yes.
So you are one of the many Northside groups.
Yeah.
even before talking about like your singing, do you remember any of the groups that were there or people you saw singing when you lived there?
What, in Mississippi?
No, in Cabrini.
In Cabrini?
Yeah, the Absalons, the Admirations. Doug had his group, the Visitors.
Doug was in the Mannequins,
right, yeah. Right. The Players, as a matter of fact, Tommy Johnson was my manager at one time. He was one of the original members of the Players group.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So how did you all get involved with singing?
We was a family group. We have been singing since we were young kids in the South, and we had a group in the South.
It was a gospel group?
It was a gospel group called the Bells of Joy, and we sang down there, and like we sang even with different...
Well, our sister Betty got us involved in singing. You know, she was, you know, like the oldest,
okay.
And she taught us all how to sing, you know, so... we were too young to remember all those groups back then, you know, we was just...
But when you were a gospel group,
mm-hmm.
You were all pretty young, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, were you just singing in your church, or did you do any other types of shows? Or
yeah, we went around to the neighborhood churches, you know, for a while, and like Sharon mentioned, one of my oldest sisters passed. And when we got to Chicago, we was on the Isabel Joseph Johnson show also.
What was
every
that?
Every Sunday. It was a gospel program.
It was on TV or the radio?
Yeah, it was on TV. Yeah.
What channel was it on?
26.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah.
How many times did you go on there?
Every Sunday for about a year.
Oh, you were the regular?
Yeah,
regular.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you were still a little kid?
Yeah, I was about 9 or 10 years old then.
So, I guess you continued to... And you were still called the Bells of Joy at that time?
Right, right. The Little Bells of Joy.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
But you never recorded anything under as your gospel group, right?
Yes, we did. You know, and I mentioned to my sister, she had forgotten that we did record some things, but nothing ever materialized, you know, because poor management. And our uncle was kind of like our manager, and he didn't know that much about the business, you know, and things just never materialized.
Did you record when you were in Mississippi or Chicago?
Chicago.
So, and do you know if they actually released vinyl?
No, I couldn't say that they did. You know, I don't think that anything was ever released. You know,
I'll try to find out for you. Like, yeah. I don't know that much about gospel, but I know some people who do. So,
right.
If they have, if the record's out, they would know.
Yeah. Well, if it was one released, it was early enough. It would be a 78 instead of a 45.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try to find out for you. So, and you don't even remember who you recorded for when you were the gospel group?
No. It was an independent, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, when and how did you all get into secular music?
We got to Chicago. You know, my sister, we were going to, excuse me, my sister was attending Cooley High, and she met some guys that turned out to be the Tell Stars.
Okay.
You know, yeah, so she would, you know, she brought them by, and those guys were the influence on me. In return, they would help me when I got in the Fugitives. You know, they was the teachers, like the bass player, Keith Samuels. He formed Ripple.
Okay.
You know, yeah, you know, so.
So, pretty much being in high school and being exposed to other vocal groups and bands.
Exactly.
What they, got you into
right.
It.
They had this show called the Wawa Tasty at Cooley.
Right. Wawa Tasty
yeah.
Show. We used to sing,
yeah.
You know.
And
was that the, like the talent
show? The talent
yeah.
Show.
Right,
at,
right.
Yeah, at
they
Cooley
would have
High.
It every year, mm-hmm. You know. Yeah. And, just, you know, my sister was pretty famous because she sang very well, you know. And
so she did she originally sing solo at the talent show and then you formed a group? And
no, we sang together.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, who, you said that you met the Fugitives and became the singer for them.
Right, right.
And, did that happen before the Delvettes happened?
Yes, it did. You know, because I remember very distinctively that my sister was, you know, she just wanted to create her own group, and she just came up with the idea.
She came up with,
you know, the concept of the Delvettes from hearing about, you know, the Marvelettes and, you know, those groups at that time, you know.
So that happened before the Fugitives?
No.
Okay.
We were in the Fugitives, and, you know, after a while, you know, she decided to start her own group, right.
So how did you meet the Fugitives and become their singer?
George Montgomery knew my sister Betty, and he was familiar with the area. I was only 11 years old, 10, 11, 11. And he told my cousin, which I didn't know was my cousin at the time, you know, that he knew this young guy and this family singer, you know, family of singers. And he took me over there. He said, you know, I think he would fit with these guys, you know, because they're his age. And I went over there and still didn't find out that they was my cousins. I was about 15 years old, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, we had been recording because I was 13 when we did Rich Man, Poor Man.
That's your set. That was your second record that you did.
Right, 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 right.
Did they live close to you also, the Fugitives?
Yeah, about a mile, I would say, from us, you know. Well, half a mile because Division is like 1200 and North Avenue is 1600.
Yeah.
Yeah, so four blocks apart, yeah.
So you started practicing with them? So were they a band and you were the singer?
Yeah, they were a band. And, you know, by mom being familiar with the guitar, my dad and all his sisters and brothers played guitar. You know, and when I got to Chicago, my sister was going to Cooley and she met these guys. And Perkins, Henry Perkins, was my first teacher, you know. And he, in turn, formed the Tell Stars. And, I couldn't really play that well, you know. As a matter of fact, they have this saying about tuning strings in cross G. It was just like, you know, you would tune the strings now that I know in fourths, but they didn't know that that's what it was, but that's actually what it was, you know, and you could just play a chord with one finger
okay.
Up and down the neck. And that's what I was doing. I wasn't really considered a guitarist, you know, but I loved it. And when I got into Fugitives, we would practice all the time, but I was mainly singing.
So, did you start doing shows with the Fugitives?
Yes. Right away, I was in the group about two or three weeks before we did our first show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where was that?
It was outside at a barbecue. On the west side, on the south side, on 39th, east. I'm not familiar with, but it was like four blocks before Cottage Grove.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's actually kind of near here, with Bronzeville.
Right.
Bronzeville. So was that a bar? Like, what kind of?
No, it was outside in the backyard.
Oh, you played someone's like backyard at this point.
Right.
Do you remember like what kind of stuff you sang and what
they
played?
Yeah, I sang "Workout" by Jackie Wilson and "Mama Show Forgot to Tell Me" by Little Beaver.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you started, like, how often did you practice and how often did you do shows?
We practiced every day, you know, and we would do shows pretty often, you know, like every other weekend, you know. I'd call him Mr. Sharkey, you know, but everybody called him Gene, you know, and he would take us around to his friends' clubs, and we would perform there, you know.
What, did you go to, like, some kind of really adult nightclubs?
All of the clubs were adult nightclubs. Yeah. But, you know, we had fun. We, you know, I just didn't look at it like that. I was just overexcited to be performing, you know. And it was nothing rowdy back there in those days. You know, they welcomed us, you know, because we was a kid group. And as a matter of fact, that's how we got embraced by E. Rodney Jones and his crowd.
Yeah, because he had the Jackson 5 for a while, too.
But he
kind of, I heard he invested like $20,000 in them and then gave them up. But you were probably before the Jackson 5, right?
I have no idea. I couldn't really say that, you know.
Okay.
I just remember the company.
Well, actually, the Jackson 5, we used to sing some of their songs.
Yeah.
And we used to sing, I'll Be There.
Yeah.
I remember the first, when they sang that, because I fell in love with that song because of the harmonizing. I really love that song to this day. We also used to, before Don Cornelius became famous.
Yeah, we were on Soul Train.
The Channel 26.
Yeah, yeah, right, mm-hmm. Right, exactly, yeah.
Do you remember how old you were when you were on that?
Yeah, about 13. That's when A Rich Man, Poor Man was out, yeah.
And how many times did you go on the show?
A couple of times. And I think the first time we went, my sister sang Love Come Down. The second time I sang Rich Man, Poor Man.
Okay, so your sister was kind of singing with the Fugitives at that point?
Yes, she was, you know.
Okay.
All of my sisters were,
all
you know.
Of us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we sang with the Fugitives, too.
Okay, but you didn't have a name yet at that point?
No.
Okay. So eventually the Fugitives ended up recording a record, and the first record was Love Come Down and Good Lovin' If You Can Get It. Is that right?
Yeah, right, correct.
Which side was the A side?
Love Come Down.
Okay, and let me play the record because we've been talking for a while, and
right,
then
okay.
We'll talk about the circumstances that led up to the recording.
Sure.
So this is the Fugitives with their first record. It's called Love Come Down.
You're in pride.
Okay, that was just the Fugitives with their very first record, Love Come Down. So how long was the group together before you ended up recording?
About 3 years.
And I noticed on the record, you're not singing lead on that record, right? Who's singing lead?
My sister, Betty Scott.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you sing on the other side? Or just the other side is the Good Love, and If You Could Get It, does she also sing on that?
No.
It was just her and my other sister.
Okay, on the other side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So originally, I didn't realize this until playing the record, partly because whenever I hear a kiddie record, I can't tell if it's like a boy singing really high or not. That originally your sisters were members of the Fugitives and sang with them, even on that record.
Right.
So how did you end up getting like a record deal?
Well, through Sandy Wilborn, he was our manager. He and my cousin, you know, was friends with E. Rodney Jones in that crowd, you know, and I think this was an independent thing, you know, with the...
Well, that was Sandy Wilborn's label.
Right, right,
Sandman.
Yeah, exactly right, so...
So, how did you... So, one of the Sharkies hooked you up with Sandy Wilborn, is that right?
No, Sandy seen us performing at an event at the Hot Chaparral.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, we were on a big show out there with Joe Williams, Oncoming Time, Johnny Williams, Lou Rawls was on that show, but he had did the show early and left.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think the Oncoming Times...
Wasn't at the Regal Theater?
No.
Okay. The Oncoming Times were together around 70, 71, something like that. So does that sound...
Right, you're right. That's about right, because that's a couple of years before we... No, it was the... I think it was in 71 when the Black Expo was the first event they had on Halsted.
Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Jesse Jackson Push Operation.
Okay.
Yeah, we were on that, you know.
Okay. So when you performed, like, so how often did you play at places like the High Chaparral?
Often. The Burning Spear, the Bonanza. Well, you know, when the record came out, we was getting around to all the clubs.
On weeknights, too?
No.
Basically, weekends.
Yeah. My mom didn't play that. Yeah.
So, did that record get play in Chicago?
Rich Man, Poor Man, or Love Come Down got more play than Rich Man, Poor Man did, you know.
But you did hear it on the radio and stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were you excited that, like, your group was getting some local
publicity? I almost blew my top when I heard that on the radio. I was riding in the car with some friends, and I was elated, you know. Yeah.
So, like, but... And you said you started doing more work, like clubs at nightclubs at on the weekends. You didn't start traveling yet, did you?
Well, yeah, we did before the girls got in the group, you know, because we would go to Galesburg, you know, Peoria and places like that. You know, we didn't travel.
Marianna.
Right, you know.
And we also went to St. Paul, Minnesota, because we had shows with the Bloodstone as well.
Okay.
But that was with the Del Betts. That wasn't with
was with the Del Betts. Yeah.
So what were your shows like? Like, how did they go? And did you have a review, or was it just like was it? Do you have a dancer? Like, how were your shows set up?
You remember seeing the movie on the Jackson 5 when they were in the basement and the strip and all that was up? That's exactly a replica of the house shows with the Fugitives.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. You know.
So. Like, but you did most of the vocals, or you and your sisters?
Yeah, we were even on the show with the Whispers at the Peppermint Lounge on Harrison.
And you were only, like, 13, 14?
Right, right.
Like, what... I know that your second record, which we're going to play in a second, sounds like James Brown. Were you saying like James Brown?
Yeah.
Was that your thing?
Yeah, he was my idol then, yeah.
So... What do you remember what songs you did the shows? Probably lots of James Brown type material.
Yeah, Cold Sweat, Got the Feeling.
Big Payback?
No, I didn't do that. That was later. No, that was later.
Okay.
There Was a Time.
Right.
Yeah.
And did you dance like James Brown too?
No, I couldn't dance like him. I could do the camel walk.
Okay.
You know, so that was the, you know, famous thing to do, you know, popular thing to do. So, yeah, I couldn't do the turns into splits and all that, you know.
did your, like, group, do you, you didn't have, like, a separate dancer or anything like that with your group? Or?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you ended up recording a second record, which actually had you on the vocals. It was Rich Man, Poor Man, and Funky You.
Right.
How long after the first record did you record that?
Probably about a year. You know, I can't quite recall how long it had been, you know, but, yeah, in that time frame, you know, about a year.
Okay, well, let me play that record, and we can talk a little bit more.
Okay.
So this is the Fugitive second record with Archie actually singing on it. This is Rich Man, Poor Man. Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. If you are just tuning in, we are in the middle of an interview with members of the group The Fugitives and Betty Scott and the Del Vets. So that record that we just played was The Fugitives' second record, and that actually had Archie singing on it. That was called Rich Man, Poor Man. So one thing I noticed was, there's a few things I noticed, like the style was much different than the first record. On the first record, the band, you could barely hear it at all. They were mixed right. down, and then there was this violin, like, really loud on
dominating
the first record.
Yeah, the tracks.
Who played the violin?
I have no idea. Old studio musicians. You know, someone, I'm sure, Mark Davis hired.
Okay, was he one of the producers of
the record? He was a contractor for the musician.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, by that second record, the band was actually, you can actually hear them much
right,
more on the
right,
record.
Right.
Was it that they got better, or?
Yeah, exactly. You okay. know, we had developed by then, you know, yeah.
And then you actually got to sing on the second record, and it sounds very James Brown
right,
influenced.
Right.
Do you remember who wrote that song?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were saying, like, you kind of wrote it real quickly, too?
Well, I didn't write the whole entire song. Actually, I wrote half of the song, half of the lyrics. My cousin Eugene and I was, you know, basically writing all the material for the group.
Okay.
Yeah, you know.
So how long did you stay together with the Fugitives?
from the time I was about 11 till I was 19. About 8 years.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you left something like in the mid-70s, probably?
Yeah, early 70s.
So how did the other group where your sisters broke away and formed a group, Betty Scott and the Del Vets, how did that go down?
You know, concerning my leaving the Fugitives or?
No, that.
Oh, that, how did that manifest?
Yeah.
Well, she came up with that idea, you know, because, as I said, she was hanging around the Telstars, and they encouraged her, you know, that they would perform behind her. So she developed her idea about the Del Vets, you know, Betty Scott and the Del Vets. So that's how that came about, actually.
So, Sharon, do you remember, like, when the group was formed?
What year was that? I don't remember.
I'll say...
I really don't remember, but we did, you know, stop singing with the Fugitives.
Right,
and then my sister wanted us to start singing alone, you know, as Betty Scott and the Del Vets.
Yeah, the record is really, you have really nice harmony, so you could tell that you've been singing together for a long time.
Because we are family, you know, we were family, and she taught us how to harmonize and stay on the right note, because if we didn't, then
she would clunk you upside your head or pinch you.
But you already did that in the gospel singing too, right?
Right.
So did Betty Scott and the Del Vets... Betty Scott, first of all, she's your oldest sister?
She was the oldest sister.
Right.
And are you the youngest sister?
I'm the youngest sister.
What was the name of the middle sister?
Her name was Vivian Faye.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So your group, did you do shows with the Telstars or with the Fugitives, or you mainly just practiced?
Yes, we did shows with them as well.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Were they similar at those clubs, or was it more like at talent shows and stuff like that?
Talent shows as well as the clubs.
Okay. And then you ultimately ended up recording a record, a really nice Chicago-sounding record called Good Feeling. Let me play that record, and then we can talk more about it.
Okay.
Okay, so this is Betty Scott and the Del Vets with Good Feeling.
I can't keep on talking about that. Give my kiss to no one else. Good feeling.
Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today we are in the middle of an interview with members of the Fugitives and Betty Scott and the Del Vets. So that was just the Del Vets one record. It was the A side of it, and it was a really nice Chicago-sounding record called Good Feeling. So we have the youngest member here, Sharona Brooks. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm blank. I just spaced out. who sang on that record. So who sings lead on the record?
My sister, Betty Scott.
Okay. And how old were you when that was recorded, do you remember? Were you out of high school?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the story? How long had the Del Vets been together before that ended up being recorded?
Well, actually, as sisters, we've always been together.
Yeah.
My sister just decided that she wanted to have a group called Betty Scott and the Del Vets. So, she wanted our name to be changed.
But you were also doing secular music instead of gospel.
Right. And she just, you know, changed our names from the Brooks Singers to Betty Scott and the Del Vets.
Okay.
You know. And so we've just really been singing since we were younger, you know. And I don't remember. Do you remember what year she got that name, Betty Scott and the Del Vets?
No, I can't recall.
Do you remember how long you had been the Del Vets before you recorded? Like, did you get record right away, or were you
no,
the Del Vets?
No, they were the Del Vets for a while before they recorded.
Yeah.
Because they were the Del Vets after they got out of the Fugitives. And,
right.
That's when she met Ed Cody, you know.
So did Archie leaving the Fugitives relate to you, your group leaving the Fugitives, or your group left first?
We left first.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just to be like a female harmony group.
Right, right.
So first of all, were you out of high school when the group formed originally?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So did you start doing shows or as the Del Vets before you recorded?
Yes. Yeah.
Did you have a manager, and who was hooking up the shows?
Well, we had different managers. We had Sandy Wilborn.
Yeah, and then Sandy was helping. Also,
he was booking a lot of the shows for us.
Okay.
Yeah, he was booking a lot of shows, and yeah, he was our manager, and he did, you know, he booked all the shows before we stopped performing.
Yeah.
He was the last manager.
Right, he had a thing for my sister Betty.
Okay.
they worked more than we did, you know.
So what that was even before you had recorded a record that you were doing shows.
Right.
What type of material did you do at your shows?
Gladys Knight,
Aretha Franklin, Mavis Staples, the Staples singers. Those were our idols, and we did most of their songs.
Okay.
And the majority was Aretha Franklin, though.
So that was what really inspired your
sister, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And did she sing lead on every song?
She sang lead on all the songs.
Okay. How much older was your sister than you?
5 years.
Okay. So how did the group end up eventually recording?
When we met Ed Cody?
Through Ed Cody. Yeah.
So Ed Cody was a famous engineer in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
The first record label that your record came out on was Ed O'Kelly's Tico label. So did he produce your record?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
How did you run into him? Do you know, through Ed Cody probably?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So you ended up doing, you don't remember what year you recorded the record, do you?
It's been so many years ago.
Between 71 and 72, I would think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and that record, it has a really nice Chicago kind of sound on it.
Do you remember who wrote the songs? Were they given to you?
No, there was a repertoire. Ed had, you know, songs people would bring to him all the time. And he suggested that she listen to it, and she listened to it and liked it, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. He presented her with a lot of material.
So you kind of auditioned a lot of songs and mm-hmm. found one that worked for you.
Right, right.
And you recorded it at Ed Cody's studio.
Right, we did.
So when it was released, did it get a lot of play in Chicago?
Yeah, on the radio, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know if you remember this because it might have happened without, but the record came out on another label after Tico. It came out on a label called One Way, which was run by this guy, Ophie Reese, who was originally one of the Kingpins, but then moved to Chicago, started a record label. Do you have any idea how it got released on a second label?
I have no idea. They, you know, we didn't even know that.
Okay. But did you start doing more shows or any shows when the record came out?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying you did like one, pretty much only one show after the record came out, or you did a lot of shows?
No, we did a lot of shows. Yeah, the last performance, I said, was in 68 at the Apollo Theater in St. Paul, Minnesota, with the Bloodstones.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so did the what happened? Like, did... I know you obviously were sisters and probably still kept singing gospel. How come you never recorded or released any more material?
Because we started running into poor management, and, you know, we just got tired of being...
Well, during that time, you know, we wasn't a student business, and people just don't know business, you know. We were artists, and that's what we did, and, you know, and you didn't question, you know, whoever was your manager, whomever the association you were, you just didn't question that. You know, you did your part, and, you know, and that's what you did, you know.
And
I think that was in... Milwaukee, you all did that.
Milwaukee,
show.
Wisconsin.
Not Minnesota. That show.
No, it was in St. Paul, Minnesota. Not
at
Milwaukee.
The Aberdeen? Oh,
mm-hmm.
okay. Mine
at the Apollo Theater.
Okay, I thought it was
mm-hmm.
Milwaukee.
No.
Yeah.
St. Paul, Minnesota.
Okay.
Well, definitely that was the story of a lot of groups, like especially younger groups, like
mm-hmm.
they got taken advantage of by shady people
right.
in the
right
industry.
Exactly.
So, but Betty or any of the other groups didn't even have any aspiration to eventually sing secular music again. You were just like, we've had enough, we're doing gospel from now on.
Exactly. That was her stand. You know, she would refuse to come and hear me perform in any clubs. She didn't want to have anything to do with clubs, you know, after that.
Oh, so she was kind of bitter about...
Yeah, she was very bitter, you know.
Okay. Yeah, that's too bad because the group sounded so good and... She was like a great singer.
Yeah, you know, she taught a lot of groups back up, you know, background singing too, you know. Yeah,
okay.
She would help groups in the neighborhood, you know, with their harmony. You know, as a matter of fact, she even worked at Paul Serrano's with Barbara Acklin and Diane Womack, you know, in that crowd with the Phoenix Horns. They was doing sessions there. She did a whole lot of arranging on vocals, background vocal things too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, did you have a name again when you were a gospel group? Did you go back to being the Bells of Joy? Or
When we were in the South, we was with the Bells of Joy. Our name was the Bells of Joy. When we moved from the South and we started being called the Brook Singers.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you continued to perform gospel as the Brook Singers?
Yes.
Did you ever record anything else?
No.
Okay. And the Fugitives stayed together for a while, and what led to Archie leaving the group?
I wanted to go out on, you know, and I was into Tower Power in Chicago, and, you know, Doug has always been, I kind of like, you know, looked up to him when I was a kid, you know.
You're talking about Doug Shorts?
Yeah, Doug Shorts, right,
okay.
You know, and he had a band, and the guitar player, Joe Stevens, and... was the one who encouraged him to hire me.
Okay.
You know, yeah. So I jumped at the chance, you know, because they were, you know, much more mature band than the Fugitives, you know, so.
So that was like around 73, something like that?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
So when you started, were you the lead singer of the band? Did you play an instrument also?
In
Master Plan.
Master Plan. You know, it's funny because I've been the drummer for Master Plan and guitar player and a singer.
Okay.
You know, at different times, you know. Yeah.
So when you initially joined, like, what were you, what kind of material were you, were you doing, like, horn rock, like that type of stuff?
Yeah, Tower Power, you know.
Okay.
Things of that sort.
And you, were you doing shows or were you still just kind of practicing together? And
no, we were doing shows. When I got in the band, when I got in Master Plan, I think our first show was in Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken. And
was it like part of the college circuit you were doing?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you know, yeah. And we left there and went to Detroit, you know. And we stayed in Detroit about 6 months, you know,
Do you remember what like types of songs you did? I mean, I know the types of bands, but do you remember specific songs?
Yeah, I was doing What's Going On by Donny Hathaway, did his version. Bobby Womack, That's the Way I Feel About You, you know, things of that nature.
A lot of the horn rock groups that were from Chicago were like mixed race groups.
Right.
Your group was it all black?
Or? Well, yeah, at one point. But, you know, we had a white drummer at one time also.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you had the same sound as groups like Chicago and Tower Power. And
well, our sound changed a little bit, you know, because he was into rock, you know, but eventually we worked him out. He would play certain songs, and I would play certain songs on drums. I called him Edgar Winter because he looked like him. You know? But that wasn't his name, you know.
Okay.
But he looked like Edgar Winter, yeah. So
the drummer originally had like a rock influence on
you. Yeah, he could play certain songs. You know, when we would do the Tower Power stuff, you know, he would play some of those things. But, you know, the R&B stuff, I played all that on drums, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So were you more kind of Earth, Wind & Fire-ish?
Yeah, later? I know. Yeah, that was my favorite group, Earth, Wind & Fire, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, were you the only singer? Did other people sing backup with
Doug,
you?
Doug was, you know, doing the, Doug had a show and then I had a show, you know.
So you didn't even sing together,
we didn't sing, you know, we had, like, shows that I would do by myself.
Okay.
Combined.
Okay.
You know, certain sets, you know, we all would sing, you know.
So, were you doing music full-time or was just something on the side?
No, it was full-time.
So you were actually, the Master Plan Incorporated were actually touring all the time.
Yeah, exactly, all the time, yeah.
Did they have a manager that was booking?
Yeah, we had an agent, as a matter of fact. Doug got a hold to an agent. I forget his name. I know his first name was Dick. I don't know his last name. But,
okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because one thing I noticed is that what that was unusual was the group was together for a really long time and had a bunch of lineup changes before you recorded.
Yeah.
Do you know why you never recorded before then? It was just because you were more focused on working?
Well, you know, we were producing ourselves, you know, so the money, we didn't have an abundance of money, you know, so when we could afford to do a few gigs, we would save money from certain gigs, and that's how the recording came about, you know.
Okay. Yeah, I think Doug was talking about how you even recorded in different places and
exactly.
Didn't even get your tapes back sometimes,
right,
stuff like
right.
that. So I have queued up right now the one record that was actually released by the Master Plan, Something to Be Done.
Yeah.
Who sings lead on the song?
I do. I wrote that. Doug sings the second lead.
Okay, so here it is. This is a group called the Master Plan Incorporated from Chicago. This track is called Something to Be Done.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show, and we are in the middle of an interview. That track, sorry about the CD player on that track. That track was just the master plan incorporated with the one record that they actually had released. And that track was called Something to Be Done. And it was a nice cut, but you could tell it didn't get distributed. Like I have a lot of Chicago records, and I remember finding that and being like, I've never seen this before. Right. So do you remember what the story was, like when that was recorded or released?
Well, I don't remember what year it was recorded, and I couldn't really tell you when it was released, you know. It's been such a long time. Yeah.
And I think the label is like Mundo or something.
Mundo. Yeah, right.
Whose record label was that?
That was the trombone's father.
Okay.
Trombone player's father, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but that record, it didn't get play or distribution, did it? Did it get any play?
No, it didn't get any play, and his name was Rudy Aguirre, Agetti, excuse me.
Okay. So, just because you didn't, I know it was harder and harder to get into the radio in the late 70s. It was already hard in the early 70s,
right.
Like payola and stuff
right.
like that.
Well, you know, as I said, you know, as a musician, you stay in your place, and whoever it is that's taking care of the business, you trust that they would do that.
Okay.
You know, to whatever extent it didn't reach, and to whatever extent, you know, you don't get information, you know, you just, you know, I mean...
But they probably weren't ripping you off in this case. They just didn't know what to do.
Right, exactly. And then the funds. Actually, what happened is the funds ran out.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, he had did about 4 or 5 tracks, and he didn't have money to do anything else. So, you know, it just stopped.
Okay, so how long did you stay together with the master plan?
No. I got in the master plan. I was about 19, I think I was. 24, 25, I guess.
Not
really sure.
Did the group break up at that time, or you left the group? Do you remember?
The group just broke up, you know, because, you know, when the group, you know, there was no master plan when I left.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just you were together for a long time.
Just Doug and I, you know, we were master plan after the group broke up. You know?
So did you end up doing more music stuff after the group broke up?
After the group broke up, I became a full-time guitarist.
Okay.
You know, I stopped singing, basically, you know.
So you played backup for people?
Yeah, Otis Clay, Artie Blues Boy, White. And when I went down south, I was playing Willie Clayton. I played with Billy Soul Bonds, Lenny Williams, you know.
And were you playing pretty much every night?
Weekends.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
But you were able to be a full-time guitarist just by playing on weekends.
Exactly.
Did you do any session work?
I did a session before I went in the South with Walter Scott. He hired me for a session.
Okay.
He was producing some things. I didn't do a session with the Dales, but, you know, I was reading charts doing this show before I left. I did the Black history thing in 05.
Okay.
Yeah, out in Washington Park.
And so you actually left Chicago at some point.
Right.
Why did you leave and when did you leave?
I left in 05 to go play with Willie Clayton.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where did you move to?
Jackson.
Okay.
Yeah. Jackson, Mississippi.
And you only recently moved back to Chicago, is that right?
Just a month ago.
Is there a reason you moved back? Like,
yeah, Doug and I have, you know, reassembled the group. And, you know, for recording purposes, to get our material finished.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
So what type of material are you working on now?
R&B and jazz, you know, smooth jazz and R&B.
Okay, and you brought some of the material, which I'm going to play right now.
Right.
This is one of the jazz tracks, right?
Right, right.
Do these even have names yet, or it's just kind of like...
I have to hear, because they're on different CDs.
We can say what it is after.
Okay, sure.
So, and is this just billed as Archie Brooks, or...
For right now, yeah.
Okay, So this is Archie Brooks with one of the jazz things that he's been working on.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was, we're in the middle of an interview with Archie and Sharon Brooks, and they were in the groups Betty Scott and the Delvettes, the Fugitives, and the Master Plan Incorporated, and they've been doing music all their life. So that track we just played, that was one of Archie's jazz tracks, is that right?
Correct.
Do you remember the name of that track?
For now, I bet I'll know the next time because it had lyrics to it, you know, but yeah.
Oh, you're going to do it with lyrics?
Right, right.
And when did you record it?
Last year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been recording material that sounds like this?
Yeah.
But have you released anything yet?
No, nothing yet. I haven't finished the rest of the songs yet.
And you said you're also working on R&B material, is that right?
Yeah, correct.
Like what type of sound are you going for on that?
Like Bobby Womack. You know,
okay.
That flavor, right.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So, do you have any kind of timeline that you think something will be released? Like, you just are kind of making moves on that now, right?
Exactly. No, there's no time frame. You know, I couldn't say I have five songs to finish on, you know, smooth jazz thing. And, you know, we're, you know, compiling songs for the R&B stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're writing most of the songs with Doug?
Right, correct.
And Sharon, do you still sing?
I sing in church now.
Okay. So you're singing every week pretty much?
On Sundays, yeah. I attend Evangel World Outreach. Our choir won How Sweet the Sound in 08.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
I heard all the ads for it, but
and, you know, my pastor is Pastor Ray Allen Berryhill. He's awesome.
Okay.
And he's, you know, he just directs the choir and, you know.
Where's the church?
We are located now at 5100 on Diversity, West Diversity.
Okay. So, and what's the name of the choir again?
Evangel World Outreach Choir.
Okay. So, first of all, I have to say thanks so much for coming and telling both of your stories.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
And a couple months ago, I interviewed Michael Sharkey of the Fugitives.
Right.
And I heard he recently passed.
Yes,
him,
he
right?
did. You know, it was a sad day, you know. I was looking forward to getting with him. You know, he has a son that's a very astute guitarist. His name is Isaiah Sharkey. And he has a son that sings, you know, that has songs out. He was in the group Entourage. Then Frank Thomas of the White Sox was their manager.
Okay.
So he's going solo now. You know, I haven't seen those guys since they were kids almost, you know.
Yeah, it's sad news, but I was glad to get him on the radio when I could. Like,
right.
He was clearly proud to get recognized for the music he made. And
right.
So, but yeah, it's sad news.
Yeah.
So, do you have any last words for the listening audience?
Well, for those that's in tune, thank you for listening. And, you know, it's a pleasure to get someone to hear some of my material, you know. And to God be the glory, Bob. Thank God for you, you know, seriously.
Well, you people were the people who made the music. I'm just some kid.
Well, you have us here, you know.
Just too bad that we wasn't recognized back in the day, you know, because the talent that my sisters and I had, we should have became famous a long time ago. It was just a lot of mismanagement and, you know,
no finance.
No knowledge about the, you know, music
the
and
business,
no,
you know. It's a business first before it's anything, you know.
Yeah, especially in Chicago, there was so much talent, but so few people got the chance to break out. Like,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, people know the Dells, the Shy Lights,
right.
Five Stair Steps.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
Other than kind of one-hit people, like, there was just talent everywhere, and
every corner.
Yeah, so it's too bad that your group never got to record and release more material, too, because that record's so good. I really like that record.
Thank you.
So I guess finally I'm going to play the other side of that record by Betty Scott and the Delvets.
Okay.
This is Down, Down, Down. And thanks again for coming up.
All right.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. Here it is.